ostracized from the general public? We'll be back, Sonia. We'll be back on March 19th at 9 a.m. And there it is. Thank you for listening, brothers and sisters. Yes, I even killed my brothers and so many others, but I ain't marching anymore. For I marched to the battles of the German trench in a war that was bound to end all wars. Oh, I must have killed a million men, and now they want me back again, but I ain't marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the wars, always the young to fall. Now look at all we've won with the saber and the gun. Tell me, is it worth it all? For I flew the final mission in the Japanese skies, set off the mighty mushroom roar. When I saw the cities burning, I knew that I was learning that I ain't marching anymore. Now the labor leaders screaming when they close a missile plant. United Fruit screams at the Cuban shore. Call it peace or call it treason, call it love or call it reason, but I ain't marching anymore. I ain't marching anymore.
Mr. Nana now, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM. You don't know.
Have you gotten your flu shot? It's never too late to protect yourself, your family, and your community against the flu. This year, it is more important than ever. Black and African Americans, people of color, pregnant people, people without health insurance or a regular health care provider, people with pre-existing conditions like asthma, diabetes, and cardiovascular disease, and people 65 and older are encouraged to get a flu shot. Multnomah County Health Department and Portland Community College are hosting a free weekly drive-through flu vaccine and COVID-19 testing clinic that will be held every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. until March 31st, 2021, at PCC's Cascade Campus, Parking Lot 1, located at 701 North Jessup Street in Portland. Entrance is on North Albina Street. You can drive through, bike through, or walk up to. To reserve an appointment for a flu shot or COVID test, call 503-988-8939. That's 503-988-8939. This campaign is a project of the Racial and Ethnic Approaches to Community Health and the Communicable Disease Services programs. It is made possible with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Public Service Announcements.
One of the greatest organizers of our times, Sizani Ungabani of South Africa, has died of COVID-19. From 1997, here is her first interview with Wings.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
We have a constitution which has a Bill of Rights which says everybody is equal regardless of sex, regardless of race, and constitutionally they have the right to own land.
Sizani Ungabani works in Natal Province, South Africa with Women and Land. I'm Frieda Worden, and I work in Texas with Women and Media. We met each other at the Fourth World Conference on Women in Beijing in 1995. 2 years later, the Foundation for a Compassionate Society brought Sizani to study at Women's Access to Electronic Resources here in Austin. I seized the opportunity to ask her about her life and work.
At national level, a huge piece of land is still sitting in the hands of just a few group of white males, because during the apartheid time, 87% of the land went into the hands of just a few white males, and 13% was used for the black population, which represents something like 80% of the population.
I wanted to hear from you about this Truth and Reconciliation Commission, because now the people who were in charge of the apartheid system are starting to confess about what they've done.
A lot of scary stuff is coming out of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, Frida. We are hearing some of these people telling the commission about how they slaughtered our people. When I left home, they were actually showing where they buried some of our activists. We have a huge number of people who just disappeared from our eyes, and we didn't know whether they were arrested or whether they were killed. And they are now saying that, yes, we did kill them, and this is where we bury them. And that happened mostly in my province.
You live in Natal province.
Yep. When I left for U.S., they were in a process of digging up those shallow graves.
Do you find that there's still a lot of propaganda about South Africa that's circulating around the world that isn't true?
Yes, the issue of black-on-black violence, that was not true. The violence was perpetrated by the government trying to kill all the democratic forces. And we found that the whole world was just made to understand that, oh, it's the black people fighting against one another. That wasn't true. The black people killing other black people were being paid by the apartheid system. And they are now confessing in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, saying that it was an instruction, and some of them were police.
This Truth and Reconciliation Commission, when the people confess, then they get an amnesty? They're not going to be punished for what they did?
What the government is saying is that, come forward, tell us the story, and if you do not, if the government finds out on its own, then the person must go on trial.
To qualify for an amnesty, you tell all?
You tell all, and then the government will decide whether you qualify or not. It's mostly if the crime committed was politically motivated.
Mm-hmm. How do people feel seeing that? Does it make you feel better or worse?
I personally don't feel better. I've tried to watch it on the TV, but I still find it very difficult to listen to people who slaughtered our people saying to the relatives, I'm very sorry, but it was an instruction from above. It's like they don't see anything wrong. They don't see how much damage they did in the country.
But the Nuremberg trials in Europe said that that was not an adequate defense, that you're not allowed to say I'm following orders to do something that's a violation of another person's human rights. You also experienced terrible things from the government at the time when you were a freedom fighter in South Africa, or a freedom organizer. Could you talk a little bit about what you were doing and what happened?
At the age of 14, I felt inspired by the work which was done in my communities by some elder people, including my mother, and I started organizing other little girls at school on one-to-one basis. And the way you start the conversation is by asking if maybe she has heard the news about someone, because at that time, most of our leaders were being arrested. There'll be articles in the newspapers, and there'll be stories in the radios, and maybe we'll ask if they have heard anything about somebody in their community who have been arrested. And that is how the conversation will start. The next day we'll talk about something else, and we will build a relationship, and then through that relationship there will be trust, and we'll start talking about serious stuff. Also, I tried to join almost all community organizations, and in those community organizations, I'll be looking at who I can start building a friendship with and try to get nearer to that person, build that friendship, have trust on her, and then start talking to try and organize those communities into like having secret meetings where we could just sit maybe at night and have our meetings there and discuss issues affecting black people. When it was nearing the unburning of the ANC, things went very tough, and most of the people whom I had organized were being targeted by the system, and some of them were killed. I remember in Ngwelezane is a township where I was evicted. There was this big rally which was convened, and a member of Inkatha, who is now a premier in the same province, stood up and read out 7 names and house numbers of people whom he regarded as the people who are organizing ANC in the Zulu-dominated area. And that was not true, because the ANC was enjoying about 70% to 80% following. We knew about it because we were working underground, and he was like seeing us as the people who were bringing the communism into the country and into the province. I did not attend that rally because the situation was too tough for me to try and expose myself there. And a friend of mine whom I had just organized, I think she joined the ANC a month before this incident. She called me and said, "Hey, Suzanne, your name was read at the rally and it was first in the list. There were 7 of us. Her name was also read in that list. And that list was telling the people that they can do anything. That meant they can come and kill us." And at that time, the government had trained quite a lot of hit squad. It had released prisoners, dangerous criminals, from jails on conditions that they are going to work hand in hand with the government in trying to eliminate all the ANC activists. And it was really scary when she phoned me and told me that my name was number one in the list. And 2 days later, a 17-year-old son who was in high school was found in a friend's car, stabbed to death, and he had more than 40 wounds in his body. While we were still thinking about what we were going to do, this friend of mine was killed together with her husband, her sister who had just come for a visit, and 2 sons. Only 2 sons survived the attack. It was so painful. The next day when we went to the house, my friend and her sister and her husband were still sitting on a sofa, riddled with bullet wounds, and the son was lying on the floor. It was difficult. And when that happened, already more than 200 youths were killed, and most of them were males. In the same month, my son survived an attack from about 20 men who were heavily armed. It was at about 8 o'clock in the morning, and at that time, all the young men, especially the young men, were not staying at home. They were in hiding because the youth was seen as the group which was organizing the ANC. My son and my daughter were also part of the ANC Youth League, and This morning my son was talking to an elder woman from next door, and that woman was asking him what he's doing at this time of the morning in the township. And he said, "Auntie, I have just come to change my clothes. I'm feeling so dirty," because he slept in a sugar cane field and he was feeling like having a shower, and he came home. As he was talking to this woman, he heard somebody saying, "There he is." And when he looked, it was a group of men heavily armed with guns and bush knives. I don't know how he survived, but he ran through the houses in order to discourage them from shooting at him. He was running up and down, up and down. And then there was this 10-year-old little girl who was his friend's little sister. When she heard the gunshot, when she looked, she could see that, it was Thulani running down the road. And she went and stood in front of the gate and she winked at him. She had already opened the back door so that he could run inside the house. And he locked himself in. I don't know how he managed to break the ceiling and went right inside the ceiling. It was so hot that day. I think the temperature was 39 degrees Celsius. He stayed the whole morning in the ceiling. And at about 1 o'clock, the mother of this little girl shouted at him to come down. They couldn't see this group anymore. And in order for him to be able to get out of that house, she had to lend him a dress and a big jersey, because with the dress on, his shoulders were looking so huge. And they thought maybe they're going to see that this is a man wearing women's clothes. And she took a huge jersey. I still see that jersey in my mind. It was white and it was so huge. And they gave him a scarf to put on his head. And that is how he escaped.
And this is your son, whom you told me is a feminist today still. Thulani is his name?
Thulani, I call him my little feminist. When we were doing research as the Women's National Coalition, which led into the formulation of the Women's Charter for Effective Equality, I was employed by the coalition to work as a provincial coordinator. And because we didn't have enough funds, I had to work single-handedly in the whole province. All the documents were coming from the national office, which is Johannesburg, written in English. And he would sit down and translate all those documents into Zulu. He is now working for the NUMSA. The NUMSA is a national union of metal workers. That union is affiliated to COSATU, which is our umbrella trade union organization in the country. He works there as an organizer. He is now in a process of assisting his colleagues to implement a gender program in the union.
Well, congratulations. You did a good job on him.
Thank you.
You have a daughter too, right?
Yes, I do have a daughter. She is also very active. She helped to organize the ANC Women's League.
I'm wondering if you would talk to me a little bit about your area of the country. It's quite in a different political situation from the rest of the country.
Yes, the province I'm coming from is not in good shape. It is the only province which is governed by Inkatha. How it happened, it's not clear to us, because as an organizer, I strongly believe that the ANC is dominating in that province. But because the Inkatha was working very closely with the past government, they had guns, and it was not easy for us to tell them that, no, you robbed us of our of the election. Mm-hmm. So they are ruling the country. We asked the state president to please arrange another election for us. And the state president said, if we cannot accept the defeat, it means that we are not yet ready to be in government.
This was Nelson Mandela. Do you know why he said that?
He didn't say why, but I personally think he said that because he knew that if he says, let's have another election, we were going to be slaughtered again. Accepting the defeat did not mean that we were not going to be slaughtered. People are still being slaughtered, but maybe it would have been worse if we had asked for another election, or maybe if we as the ANC had won the election.
You talked to me about the arms, that those are the same weapons you told me that had been used elsewhere. Would you explain?
The weapons which were mostly used to slaughter our people were weapons which were transported to Mozambique, and they were used by the RENAMO to slaughter the Frelimo people. And when the slaughtering went into our country, those same weapons were transported back into the country.
So this is a pattern of weapons being supplied basically to attempt to either destabilize legitimate governments or install puppet governments. Or
mm-hmm. We have just had a confession in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission where a general is saying that he transported 3 truckloads of weapon to Ulundi. Ulundi is the place where the Bantustan government, which was led by Mangosuthu Buthelezi, was situated. Oh. That's in the province of Natal.
And the Bantustans were supposedly independent governments that were set up by the South African government, where black people could be ruled by a puppet and mm-hmm. deprived of their resources.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Like reservations, kind of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you had been living in your whole life in such a situation of oppression where everybody else could vote, but not black people, right?
Especially on the election day, it was amazing. People were so open, and they were not scared of a stranger. They were talking to one another. The whole environment was very healthy. We were only disappointed when we heard that in Natal we didn't win the election, but the ANC at national level took 7 provinces out of 9. I think the most important thing right now would be to help the women educate themselves about the changes done by the government at national level. Changes like the ratification of the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, the ratification of the Beijing Platform for Action and the Beijing Declaration. The government changed all policies and laws discriminating against women in 1995 after it had rectified these 3 documents. And that message hasn't gone through into the communities, especially in the rural areas. So there need to be some kind of mechanism used to help the women educate themselves about the processes.
What kind of work do you do with that group?
I work as a gender specialist for the Association for Rural Advancement. It's an organization working with communities who were forcibly evicted from their land by the apartheid system. And now we are trying to help them to either get back to their own land or get an alternative land. The organization was established in 1979, and all along until 1995, since South Africa is a patriarchal society, land issues has always been regarded as men's issues. And when we had the new government, the new constitution, which had a Bill of Rights which says everybody is equal regardless of sex, color, the organizations decided to employ me to see to it that women are drawn into the process and that their issues are integrated into the land reform program at community level and at national level. It's difficult because in the rural areas, more than 50% women are unemployed, working unpaid job. The government is assisting people. They have even got funds where they fund people to go and buy a piece of land. But land is very expensive in our country, and the government is working with household heads. In 1993, we did a research in order to formulate the Women's Charter for Effective Equality, and that research showed that 59% of the households are headed by women. The government at national level is not saying that the household head is a male, but the communities in the rural areas see the household head as a male person. The government can change laws, but I don't think the government can change people's attitudes. When I started working with AFRA, I just started by popularizing the Women's Charter for Effective Equality. In preparation for the new government, the South African women, as the Women's National Coalition, drew up a document which they call a South African Women's Charter for Effective Equality. It took it very long for the communities to get the results because of lack of funds we could use to get to the communities. And not much was done in terms of popularizing it and making women aware about it. My organization is funded by international funders, and they get enough money for me to be able to go to the communities. And the problem is that I can't go to other communities which my organization doesn't work with during working hours. If I want to go to other communities, I have to do it during my spare time.
So you're a completely dedicated person. You're going during your working hours and in your spare time to get the women involved in the constitutional process.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So are the women getting any land?
Not at the moment, Frida. It's still very difficult for the communities to accept that women do have a right to own land.
What do you take in to teach them? Do you just take yourself and tell them? I mean, they're not literate. How do you educate them?
We use newsprints, we use drawings, maybe singing, all those types of things.
Do you have a song about the liberation that you could share?
Yeah, Malibongwe.
Oh, I know that song.
You know it?
Beijing. Taught me in Beijing. Well, uh-huh. Tell everybody how it goes and what it's about.
It was started by the women in a struggle against past laws. It's called Malibongwe Igama Lamakhosikazi, meaning praise the name of the women.
I'll let you sing it first, and then I'll join you for a chorus.
Okay. It goes, Malibongwe, 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 Igama Lamakhosikazi, Malibongwe. Igama Lamakhosikazi, Malibongwe. Malibongwe, 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 Malibongwe. Ikamala makosi gazi mali bongwe. Ikamala makosi gazi mali bongwe. It has got a slogan that goes with it, which says, Watinta bafazi, watinti mbokoto, uzogufa. Meaning, you strike the women, you strike the rock, you are going to be crushed.
Wow!
Sizani Ngubane of South Africa. To the great sorrow of all but those who often tried to kill her, Sizani died of COVID-19 in January 2021. After this 1997 interview, she went on to found the Rural Women's Movement, which works on issues like women's land rights, violence against women and girls, and enforcing the gender equality aspects of South Africa's constitution. The movement is still struggling against confiscatory land policies in KwaZulu-Natal province and against yet a third attempt by the African National Congress to give total personal control over local courts and land allocations to so-called traditional chiefs. For Wings, I'm Frieda Worden. To hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org. Wings thanks our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Well, it's 10:30 a.m., so naturally it's time for Film at 11 here on Community Radio KBO.